know, I've been doing this show for about 11 years now. Nobody has ever, well, I've had some people say they like what I do, but my guest this week is from out west, and she was telling me before the interview that she really likes and she gets a lot of what I'm doing and sees a lot of it. And boy, when you hear that, you just really get pumped up. So Sherry Engler is on the West Coast, and she has a book called The Pearls of Wisdom, A Fairy Tale Guide to Life's Magic Secret, and you know what? I wrote this down, and I can't read it after that. So what is the name of the book, Sherry? How are you doing?
I'm great. I'm so happy to be here. The name of the book is The Pearls of Wisdom, A Fairy Tale Guide to Life's Magic Secrets for All Ages.
That's what it says. Now I can read my writing. So you're out in, where is it, Oregon or Washington? Where are you at?
I'm in Southern Oregon.
And how long have you been out there?
Oh, boy, 26 years.
Wow.
But I'm a native of Michigan, where you are, from a little tiny lake called Long Lake in a tiny town near Hillsdale, Michigan.
Hillsdale. I know where that is. Haven't been there many times. So you've been to Upper Michigan before? Have you been to this area?
When I was a kid, we took vacations up there. Michigan is an amazing state. I think that's why I'm in Oregon. I think it's the other state that's most like Michigan, so it feels like home to me.
There's a lot of beauty, but there's also a lot of, I think there's a lot of, how do you describe it? There's a lot of cool things that go on, maybe because of the way the water, the connection to that. There just seems like there's a lot of paranormal activity in Michigan, in Upper Michigan, especially up here. So that's what I like about it. There's all kinds of things going on, it seems like. And I'm guessing it's like that in Oregon as well?
It is exactly like that. We have Bigfoot here, and we have energy vortex where you stand at an angle. And, yeah, it's an amazing place. It's very magical.
So how would you describe yourself? Are you a psychic medium channel? I mean, is there a definition? I don't want to give definitions, but how would you define yourself, if you don't mind?
Well, I wish we could all just start over again and redo, have a do-over for what we're called, because the word psychic has been pretty much destroyed by online psychics, and then there's the whole mystique around fortune tellers, and then there's the days of, what were they called, the spiritualists with seances and raising the table. We just had a really rough time of it. So I think a lot of people aren't real happy with that word psychic because it conjures all those images. We're intuitive people, but even that isn't correct because everybody is intuitive. Mm-hmm. It's just that we have chosen this as a life path, and it's something that we've focused on, and we've honed those skills. Similar to if somebody, you know, everybody could probably learn to play a violin, but then there's concert violinists, right? That's what they do for their life.
Right.
But yeah, the names are difficult. Usually when I say I'm a medium, somebody just looks at me funny and says, oh, okay, well, I'm a large.
Right.
No.
Right.
No, I'm not talking size.
No.
I'm talking occupation. A medium is somebody who talks to dead people. So there's that. You know, people think all psychics talk to dead people, but it's a subspecialty. There's actually not that many psychics that do actually communicate with the deceased. So that's what a medium is. And I guess the most politically correct word might be intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Still working it out.
Do you feel like you also do a fair amount of channeling as well? Is that something you do as well?
Yeah, I definitely do channeling. I've gotten so much information by channeling angels, and a lot of famous people have come through, especially lately. There's some scientific projects that I'm working on, and there are some scientific, well-known characters who have come through to help me a little bit. It's not uncommon, you know, in our realm. There's such an awakening, and there's so many people whose vibration has gone up to the level that they're able to contact other beings, other entities and spirits. So for us, it's extremely normal, but it hasn't quite gone into mainstream yet. So we're still trying to bridge that chasm, I think. And your show, doing things like this, is just supremely helpful.
I'm glad you feel that way. At least you didn't call me and send me any hate mail, so that's always good, you know. not that I ever got any. So The Pearls of Wisdom, tell me about this book, because we talked about this before we came on. Sounds very fascinating. It comes with a lot of answers, but it's done in a unique way. Can you tell us about that a little bit, Sherry?
Yeah, well, it really is what the title says. It's a fairy tale guide to life's magic secrets, and it is for all ages. It's enjoyable by mostly adults read it, but that opportunity is there for parents to read it to their kids or for kids to read it. There's so many metaphysical principles and just psychological and sociological and you name it. There's all kinds of learning to be found within those pages. It talks about death and dying and still continuing to speak to spirits on the other side. It's about healing, the power of colors to heal, resonance, vibration, moving between dimensions, just the inner courage that it takes to get through life and all of the things that dash us down and the courage that it takes to keep getting up every time and why bad things happen to people. You know, that's ultimately this young princess, she goes through a lot of loss, a lot of tragedy. There's the ultimate battle between light and dark, you know. So there's this very dark character who doesn't believe in magic. And then there's the whole issue of feeling different. You know, there's a lot of people's abilities that feel different or for whatever reason we feel different. We don't look like everybody else. We don't act like everybody else. We have different ways of living our lives. It's hard to feel different and still feel accepted, and you have to make that decision internally. You know, am I going to be who I am and who I'm supposed to be, or am I going to let go of my gifts so that I can be accepted by other people? It's a trials and tribulations story, but in the end, well, there's this wonderful character. Oh my God, she's so adorable. Her name is Aunt Tilly, and she helps this Princess Shalimar through all these troubles, and she always says this one line. She says, there's a reason for everything, whether we know what the reason is or not. There is a reason for everything. And I think if there were a moral of a story, that would probably be one of the big ones, that we go through what we go through to become stronger and to learn what we had to learn. And Earth is basically a school. We come here to learn. So it all depends on what your perspective is. And I think the book helps people look at things from a different perspective, and that can be extremely helpful.
I think that's awesome. I'm always open to looking at things, as we talked before, keeping an open mind. It's too easy to fall into a category and then say, well, I found all the truth and here it is. And then there are still so many things that if we challenge ourselves that even if you're an enlightened being that's here on this planet, there are so many dimensions I have no clue about. There's so many different beings that exist out there, levels of consciousness. So it's easy to kind of say, well, we're connected to our higher self, and that's connected to source and all. But, yeah, what's all the stuff in between is what I don't know about. And I think it's just there's trillions and trillions of beings out there, maybe a much bigger number than that. So to me, it's fascinating, this journey that we take, and I love learning. I never liked it as a kid in school, believe it or not. I was not a great student, Sherry. I was bored. And then it's somehow later in life, just becoming an adult, I'm just so intrigued by even looking at history or math or anything to learn from, but especially metaphysical paranormal. So would you mind telling me some of your experiences in life when you were younger that kind of made you know that something was different, that you had maybe unique abilities, or that you experienced things that were just a little unusual?
Oh, sure. Well, first, I just want to acknowledge what you said about how much we know and how much we don't know. I'm always going to listen to the person who, you know, they may sound like they know a lot, but if they're saying how much of respect they have for what they don't know, that's the person I'm going to listen to. I'm probably not going to pay too much attention to the ones that seem like they've just got it all figured out, because what I know is that if you're in a human body, you're already limited. Mm-hmm. There are so many higher level beings in the universe that we're actually one of, I don't mean this in an insulting way, but we're perceived as one of the lower forms of existence,
right. Yeah.
Compared to other beings out there. And I think we just need to stay humble and stay in our place and remember that, you know, we don't know everything. We have more ego than we have a concept of just how big the universe is and how much we don't know. So, and we're limited. You know, there's only so much we can know. We're only operating on two strands of DNA. You know, I mean, it's like, where's all the rest of that? But anyway, I just appreciate that humble approach to how much we think we know and how much we don't know.
Right.
Regarding growing up, I don't know that I knew that there was... Okay, so I lived a pretty isolated life on this lake in Michigan, as I told you. I lived mostly with animals. We lived on a lake where people come up to visit during the summer, you know, summer vacations, and then they're gone all the whole rest of the year. So I had, like, my family, my brother to play with, but mostly I was really connected to all the animals there. And I think that was really paramount in becoming who I am and as close to nature as I am. I think basically all the answers to the questions we have can be found in nature. But as far as being different than other people, yeah, I had some pretty weird experiences, but I just assumed that everybody was like me. So how do I explain this? It was more like finding out, so everybody doesn't do this, so everybody doesn't know this. And it wasn't until then that I realized that maybe I was a little bit different. And that's part of why I wrote the book. As soon as you feel like you're different, and there's more of them than there are of you, what do? We immediately think that there's something wrong with us. And we just need to stop doing that. I wish I could get hold of kids out there, and well, I am. You know, that's why I wrote the book. I want to help the young ones coming up. I want to help them be strong, and females in particular, and teach them whoever they are, that's who they are. And stay that way and let that be okay. Don't compare yourself to somebody else. You're not that other person. And the way our egos work and our critical minds work, we just talk ourselves down and say, oh, there's something wrong with me. What we don't understand is everybody else is doing that too, and nobody's right.
Right.
We're all just fine the way we are.
Some people, and I think sometimes, you know, I think my experience in life, and I'm not knocking anybody or judging anybody, we all have different, we don't know everybody's choices for what happens to them in life. So if you are the prom king or queen, and everybody looks up to you, and every just thing falls in your lap, there might be, that's your journey. But I know, and I'm grateful that it wasn't mine, and because it kept me more humble, and not saying that you couldn't be that way if you were a prom king or queen, but I'm just saying that sometimes the road that's a little more bumpy is a better road, or not being accepted. You know, we think it's a bad thing to not be accepted, but actually it's a blessing. I lived out in the country. I had not too many other neighbor kids around to play with, but you learn to be creative, you learn to develop, and you learn to trust your family and nature around you, animals and all of that. What a blessing that was. If I'd have grown up in town, I'd have been in trouble. I was the type of kid that probably would have had to learn things the hard way, you know, Sherry? So, you know, so it was nice to grow up where I did, and then you just see why you did. Years later, you go, oh, you know, had I not lived where I lived, I wouldn't have had the paranormal experiences, the regular animal experiences, just everyday life in a humble, more of a humble approach to it. My mother was very humble, and she, you know, we'd have snakes sometimes in the house. Oh, it's just a snake, nothing to be afraid of, boys. And she'd haul it outside, you know. She'd catch a fly in the house, and she'd go, oh, they're living beings too, and she'd let it outside. And just, you know, what a wonderful divine being. But it was, to me, it explained everything, having that opportunity to be different, which I hated as a child. Now, to me, is such a blessing. Thank goodness I was different, is the way I look at it, Sherry.
Oh, gosh, everything you say just spurs so many thoughts in my head. I think we had pretty similar childhoods, and interestingly, even in the same state. And I remember my mom showing me a butterfly, and I was never religious, didn't go to church and didn't do prayers and all that, but nature was kind of my religion. My mom showed me a butterfly, and she said, now remember this. Every time you look at something that's that beautiful, you have to know that there's something much greater than you that created that, and be grateful for that. So that is my, that's my religious spiritual background, is looking at butterflies. What a gift that was, you know, what a gift that was. Your mother sounds wonderful. It sounds like she's very similar. And talking about the snakes, I do the same thing. I'll catch a gopher snake here somewhere, and I'll run down to my kid's grade school, and the teachers there just know me. And they're like, okay, here's Mrs. Engler. We're going to take a break and see what she brought today.
Oh.
And I just come into the snake, and I let all the kids hold it, because people kill snakes because they're snakes, and it's so wrong. And I let the kids hold it and see that it's gentle and it's dry. You know, it's not slimy. It's not evil. It's not going to bite you and kill you. And again, if we can just get some common sense into kids before they take on all these really negative ideas, and, you know, why be afraid of snakes? Why not just hold one and see how beautiful it is and learn about what it does and how it helps nature? So, yeah, I think you, your mom and I would have gotten along famously.
You know, and when you talk about that you're doing this for the kids and the girls especially, because, you know, I talk about, you know, from time to time I have guests on that, that are here to probably remind us, I guess, more than anything, the divine feminine returning to the planet. Where do you sit on that?
Well, I'm an Aries. I'm a warrior spirit. So, boy, that's an interesting question. So to me, the divine feminine is just, it's the strength of being female. And it's the beauty and grace of being female. It's the life-giving aspect, but also we're really tough. You know, there's things that women go through that men could never go through. And to me, that's what divine feminine is. I think with a psychology background, I've learned that hypersexuality or gender identity isn't the healthiest state. You know, there's hypermasculine and there's hyperfeminine. The healthiest state is a state more towards androgyny, where you have a balance between the masculine and feminine. And I think I have that. I ride a motorcycle, and I used to do research with snakes, and I have a Glock for just shooting. I just grew up with guns, you know. I mean, not to kill things, but just, I don't know, it just came in my family. But at the same time, you know, a lot of nurturing of nature, and I have had every wild animal you can think of. It's just like there's a lot on both sides, you know, and I think that's a healthier way to be because you can understand that part of the other person. So if I have masculine understanding in me, I'm going to understand men better. And if they have a feminine aspect in them, they're going to understand me and women better. And I think we would get along better as genders on this planet if we did find more of an equilibrium there. So that's what I feel about divine feminine. I feel like it's our time to come into places of power. I think there's been a patriarchy for way too long, and I don't think they've exactly done a great job of it. And if for no other reason, I'd say it's our turn. Let's see what we can do. I think we need to raise our girls strong. And that was actually original reason why I wrote the book, was I saw my daughter going through grade school, and you can't have too many things. You can't be really smart and pretty and athletic and an artist without the other girls tearing you down. And it's like, this has to stop. There's so much rivalry and jealousy and these catty little cliques where we attack each other if we're too much. Mm-hmm. And then the boys are very intimidated by these very strong, gifted girls coming up. They don't even know what to do with them. They're just kind of scared of them. So the girl feels rejected from the boys, and she feels attacked by the girls, and that is where we start to dumb down. We start to say, okay, in order to survive, our survival instincts come out. In order to survive, I need to be less than I am, apparently, and then I won't draw these attacks. And that's where we start giving away our gifts. And that's why I wrote Pearls. It's like we have to find a way for our girls to feel safe, to be everything that they are, safe to be strong, safe to have gifts, safe to... We need to support each other and not tear each other down. So a lot of people blame the male world for what happens to females. I say let's go back and look what's happened with between little girls and where did they learn those behaviors.
You know, part of it, too, I think, is how we choose to look at it. Because, you know, one person can go through the same thing as another, and they will come out of it with a different attitude. And I think a lot of things in life are meant to... These are not by accident, right? So everything that happens is there to build you in some way. I can look back at my own life and see some of the things that maybe caused me to pull back a little bit. But over time, I learned to overcome a lot of those things. And I believe I deliberately line those up. So wouldn't you say that we're all kind of responsible for our own, what happens to us, our own destiny?
There's a whole list of perspectives that you can just go down and say, okay, what about this and what about this? So, yeah, you could say, let's help the girls be stronger. Or you could say, isn't that what makes them, how they become strong? If they didn't have that conflict, how did they learn to rise above it? So isn't that conflict necessary on some level? I would say, yeah. And that's Aunt Tilly who says there's a reason for everything. We just don't always know what the reason is. Well, I'll do a spoiler alert here, but ultimately, toward the end, Shalimar realizes that everything that happened to her made her who she was, and she was in gratitude for that. It wasn't like, oh, this person was horrible to me or this terrible thing happened to me. It was, I'm so grateful that those things made me who I am now. And that's what we have to focus on. But then there's another perspective you could take, which is we chart our lives. So we planned all those things to happen. We planned to go into grade school and, you know, decide if you're going to allow yourself to be dumbed down or not. We planned if we end up marrying 5 alcoholics in a row. I mean, look at the really, what seems to be destructive behaviors in our lives. Mm-hmm. It's like, why did we do that? And that goes into life charting. That goes into past lives and reincarnation. There's certain themes that we carry in our life from one life to another. And if we don't resolve those, we'll tend to just keep going back to that same. It's like if you fail a class. Mm-hmm. You keep going back into that class over and over until you learn the message, until you resolve that issue and your soul grows from it. So on this topic, what I suggest to people is if you are having repeat patterns, if you are having destructive behaviors in your life that you're causing for yourself or what seems to be somebody causing it for you, what would your soul have wanted to learn from putting you in that position, from having these experiences? Figure out what your soul wanted to learn, and then learn it and get out of that class.
You know, and
does that
to
make
me,
sense?
Yes, it does. And I was going to say, for me, the answer is always the same. It's a form of that, at least. There's a one four-letter word, and it's not a nasty word. There's one four-letter word that's always the driving force behind all of it, and that's love. I mean, everything is pushing us to find a greater capacity, whether it's forgiveness, whether it's letting go, whether it's making peace with things. Because none of this really, we think it's a big deal, but none of this really is that big of a deal. Because for one, we've been doing it for a long time. And for two, this is not what we are. This is just a temporary place that we came to experience physical bodies. And this is a lot of fun. Look at this. This is great. And, oh, by the way, you know, at one point I was fully conscious. But now that I'm here, I don't really remember. But that's kind of fun, too. And it's like, no, it's not. I'm tired of this routine of going around in this circle, allowing other energies, duality, not knowing what we fully are. I'm ready to move into a conscious shift of becoming, you know, what they, some, do you believe that we're maybe moving in this fifth dimensional phase? Are you into that at all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody is starting to wake up. So ultimately, the whole planet is raising her vibration. You can call her Gaia. This is a living entity. People channel the planet. You can channel anything. Going back to channeling, you can channel a rock. Mm-hmm. You know, all you have to do is let that information come into your head and not judge it. But Gaia, the planet herself, is raising the vibration. This is called the Earth Experiment. According to outer terrestrials, there's all these civilizations out there who are actually watching this planet because it's called the Earth Experiment. And the planet itself is going up in vibration. Therefore, its inhabitants have to go up as well. Well, we're in this crunch period right now. It's like make it or break it. So the way I describe this to people is, do you know those, maybe you don't have them back there, but there's these puff balls. They're like these tan balls, about as big as a tennis ball or smaller, on trees, and they follow the ground, and they're just like some mold or spore or fungus something.
Right.
And they're so thin and brittle. And if you crush them, there are these black spores inside, and you're like, ooh, but you know, that was some parasite for you in the tree. Well, take that image and imagine that people are that fragile right now. So with the vibration going up, we're sustaining an inordinate amount of pressure on us and who we are and what we are and how we're living our lives. And it's when I channel Metatron, he's made it, and Azrael too, they've made it very clear that we are in the days of judgment right now. But it's not a biblical judgment. It's judgment of you and yourself. Who am I? We're being forced to step on a scale. Well, this pressure, I think we all feel it. I mean, we see it in society. It's pressing down. So take that fragile little round ball. Let's just use the eggshell. It might be easier. An empty eggshell. So this pressure is coming down to that eggshell. Well, people are cracking all over the place. That's because they don't have the inner core of who they are and why they're here and what it all means. And they don't have the center. So the center would be like this chunk of lead, maybe. And when that pressure comes down, it cracks the egg, but it stops at that lead. Those are the ones who are going to go forward and maintain and survive this incredible pressure we're under right now, energetic pressure, because the vibration is going up so high that all of our crud is being forced to the surface. We're having to look at our shadow selves. We're having to burn off the dross. We're having to try to declutter ourselves, declutter our lives. It's said, you know, for ages, all the way back to Egypt, that we need to be as light as a feather when it comes time to be weighed, you know, to go on to a higher level, whether you want to consider that the afterlife or heaven or the fifth dimension. We need to go there as light as possible with as little as baggage as possible. And that's kind of where we're at right now. We're trying to go up with the vibration of the planet and just sustain our daily lives. And with this comes the speed up of time. So we're trying to do twice as much in half the time. And people are very irritable. You know, they're all feeling the pressure. Look at what's happening with our government and across the globe. It's very clear that there is a change happening, but it matters how conscious you are of what that change is and what it means and how it relates to you. So my advice is just to focus on your spiritual self, stay very grounded, learn as much as you can, and stay in that high vibration and go with the planet as it raises up. And the people throw around the word vibration. It's like, oh, what does vibration mean? You know, what is it? Why does it? Basically, it's what you just said. It's the four-letter word. It's love. So a high vibration is a state of feeling loved or giving love, and it's also just being happy. Happiness and joy are the highest vibrations. Laughing is a very high vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So just stay happy all the time. And whether you're in this messed up world or not, your world is going to draw very positive things to you because like attracts like. And you just need to not look at the rest. And I'm not saying, oh, don't care about what's going on in your world. I'm saying have a healthy distance from it and do what you can in your little sphere of your life with who you are, who you associate with, and the light that you put out. That's what you can do. You know, be the change that we want to see. That is so true.
You know, it's so easy to get wrapped up in what goes on, and you look at the Great Division, and it really, you know, you almost got to be like you're disconnected from that. Like you care about it, but you have to step away because then we're judging, then we're allowing emotional. And this is, you know, I've tried to explain that on my podcast and on my site. There are those that feed off of this negative energy. They're deliberately behind the scenes, pulling the strings to get you riled up because they've been controlling things for a long time and they feed off of that. So the more we, you know, I know people that are very loving beings, but I see them bashing people pretty badly, you know, over this election stuff. And it's like, that's not maybe the way to go, at least not the way I want to go with it, as far as, you know, I'm not going to say anything as far as I'm concerned, but it's like, if you want to get my attention, if you want me to listen to what you have to say, do it with love and respect. I don't care who you're talking about. Then I'll pay attention a little bit to what you have to say. And I think we all get caught up in this. This is deliberately designed to get us caught up, isn't it?
Well, again, you know, there's so many perspectives on things. So I'm going to throw a different perspective out on that. So Trump becomes president, and I definitely don't talk about politics, but I'm just going to use that as an example that there is a lot of nasty stuff going on out there. Well, would we, okay, how do I want to say this? Okay, so when the angels talk to me, they explain things like this as catalysts. They say this person contracted and agreed to come into the life, and Trump has received a lot of hate, and so did the Bushes, and, mm-hmm. you know, horrible despots over time, horrible dictators. Perhaps they come in to draw the light workers forward and say, okay, this isn't all right anymore. This is where I'm going to draw the line. And then what I've been told about being in these days of judgment and this huge shift, we are in it right now. I mean, ever since the Harmonic Convergence, 2012, all these huge portals and energy waves coming through, trying to support the shift that this planet is trying to take, there's these challenges that get put out there, but it's the time for light workers to step forward. And I'm not sure everybody understands what a light worker is, but that's just somebody who planned to come into this life at this time to give whatever they have to give to make a difference. Clearly you're a light worker. I'm a light worker. And that's the warrior in me that I was talking about. I'm very determined to go out and do something. I'm not going to wait for somebody else to do it. Well, I'm stepping forward. So when you see what maybe are perceived as villains in our society, and ISIS and the Sandy Hook school shooting, this might be a controversial perspective, but oh well, right. Here I go again.
Please, go ahead.
Those children are martyrs. There's many, many, many martyrs in life. They came in to wake up everybody else. They had a short little life, and bless their souls for doing that, because there's so many lighted people who said, okay, that's where I draw the line. Now I'm going to get involved. Because it's that contrast. And it's not just, you know, and there is darkness here. The only reason that all of the light workers are here is not because darkness is bad. It's that it's out of whack. It's out of balance. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't understand. We're not trying to eradicate darkness. No. There has to be light and dark. If you didn't have one, you wouldn't have the other. And beings come to Earth because it's a school, so they can experience that, just like you were saying earlier. We want to experience that contrast. It's how our soul is born. But various kind of not okay techniques have been used by the darker side to manipulate it to their advantage, and it is out of balance. Mm-hmm. So the shift is happening to get us back in balance. But anyway, so these dark people come forward. Well, they could be on our side. They could be out there saying, okay, I'm going to do outrageous things because I need to wake up my crew here. And the light workers need to wake up and get into action, because we come here and we all have amnesia and we're sleeping. And we kind of forget why we came here. We have this urgency and we have this knowing inside that I know I'm here for something, but we don't know what it is. That's going on everywhere, and it's hard for people to cope with that. Well, it's time to step forward. The more you see contrast come out, that's calling to our side to wake up and start actually doing something, not just thinking and hanging out and living your mundane life, but to be in your spiritual purpose.
You know, I think if we just all embrace love and we sent it out every day, that's one of the biggest things we can do. People wonder, well, how can I make a difference? Maybe I'm a certain age no longer and I'm not as active anymore, or maybe I live in a part of the world where I don't have even a vehicle. And it's like holding the space, as a good friend of mine, Joy, who's a really good friend of mine, would say, just holding the space. Every thought, every feeling goes out to the universe. So if you really want to be a difference, hold love and send it out as much as you can every day, every moment of every day. And I don't do that. I'm far from perfect on this, Sherry. But it's like I always realize that's one thing I can do every day that can make a difference.
Yeah, I think we're all here to do our unique thing. But at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And I think people do feel helpless. I think there's a lot of people that want to make a difference and they just don't know how to do it. And what I always recommend is get involved in your community. We've gone so digital and so global and techno-oriented that we've lost our roots. And that's how my book starts out. It talks about tribal life and this these characters coming from a clan who lived according to the tree of life. That was their symbol. So the roots were the elders, the tree, the trunk was the community, the limbs were families, and the leaves and fruits and flowers were the children, which went on to seed the new generation. We lived as a tribal society successfully for 3 million years, and we've lived as a civilized society for 10,000 years, and we're already destroying our own planet. So it's not going the right direction. But what I always suggest is you can't, like, just go out there and change the whole world, and you'll feel hopeless if you do that. But you can change yourself, like you're saying. Just be happy. Find something to be grateful for. If you're feeling depressed, again, Aunt Tilly in this book, she's so darling, she tells young Shalimar, she says, you cannot have gratitude and anger or depression or grief or whatever in your heart at the same time. And she, like, dares her to try it. And she realizes you can't. You can't hold both of those feelings at once. And she says, so you have to choose which one you want. Well, who's going to choose depression without feeling a little silly about yourself? Of course, you're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to try to choose gratitude. But just being conscious that you have a choice and that your whole world around you will change once you are in gratitude for what you have instead of in depression or loss or anger for what you don't have or what you can't get. So it does start with yourself. But I encourage people to go back to our tribal way of life and go into your community. You can't change the whole world, but you can go to a nursing home. You can sit with a bunch of really lonely old people who don't have any family to come visit them. You can go to animal shelters. You can do foster care and get them out before they're put down. You can help spay-neuter campaigns. You can go foster children. You can go to homeless shelters. You can take your kids to soup kitchens and get them to understand that there are people suffering. There are people in need. Not everybody has a cozy, perfect, happy life. Get out there and see the suffering. And then when you do something for that person that makes you feel good, even if it's just buying gifts for a child on the Christmas trees, that was brought up recently, where the kids, you see in stores and whatnot, there's a little note from a child that's something that they're asking for that they wouldn't get otherwise. Go buy those gifts and give them to that child. That feeling that you get when you do something for somebody else, that's what we're living for. That's when you make a difference. That's when your light really shines, and it shines on other people, and they feel it, and that ignites their light, and so on and so on. So it starts at home. It starts with you, but get involved with your community.
You know, I live in up here, too. It's like people are already that way a lot. Maybe it's different in other parts. I guess, you know, I've lived here most of my life, but my neighbors, people I know, the job I have, I'm constantly involved with others and helping them in so many ways, just giving unselfishly. And then there's times, to be honest with you, Sherry, I just want to get away from it all, and I just want to be out in nature where I live and think about nothing. Just, okay, I'm going to sit here, and for maybe the weekend, I'm not going to be any part of it. And then the week starts again, and I'm just flying 50 miles an hour, being involved with a lot of different things. But I agree with you. I think we can do things for others. They can make a huge difference. And then I think also it creates that feeling with us. And if you really want to tap into what love is, you know, it's that feeling, once you know what it is, a good example being both my parents, after they passed, have come back to visit me. And neither one of them said a lot. I knew it was more than just a dream. But this wave of love that came from both of them is, I've heard people call it the tsunami of love. This is the love of the universe. This is the love of the Creator. And All I have to do is think about that now. I was shown that if I want to get back in touch with that. So I think once we capture that feeling and we recognize it, all we have to do is go back and think about it. And then it becomes, oh, yeah, okay, now I remember what this is, you know? It's creating that. We create that by being part of that community, that love, that deeper connection. And once we have that, it's easier to draw upon it and bring it out and then express it to others. I've always been like this. Have you been like this, Sherry? When I was a little kid, I just had this incredible love for everybody I met. And, you know, I kind of got warned by my mom, now let's be careful, don't go everywhere. And I remember my mom would always befriend these older ladies, and she'd take them shopping somewhere or pick up their medicines. Well, one time we were in the car, I was 3 years old, I think, and my brother was with me and this older lady and my mom, Mrs. Johnson. And so Mrs. Johnson gets out of the car, and I said, Mom, aren't you going to go with Mrs. Johnson to go see, to get help her get her medication? And she goes, no, she's fine. She knows what she's doing. And I said, well, I'm going to go with her. And she goes, don't. And I go out of the door, and I'm 3 years old, of course, thinking, well, I'm going to support Mrs. Johnson. And I walk over to this door that I think is the door that she went in. There's a bunch of buildings, you know. And I open the door and I go in there. It's a bar. And these people look at me and they go, what do you want? And I go, well, I'm looking for Mrs. Johnson.
That's so funny.
And then I just hightailed out of there and I went back to the car and I didn't say anything because it's like Mom knew best, you know. Anyway, do you ever feel that way as a child? Do you have memories of that pure love that just you had for everybody?
I was really attached to animals. Again, I wasn't actually around that many people. But I remember something really stands out. I don't know if this might be yet another different perspective, but I very, very young. I must have been like three or something. And it was like my first view of what humanity is. And it just shocked me to my core, and I'm not sure I've ever really gotten over it. And it was the simplest thing. It was a little boy that was about my age, and he was watching this bug, and he was like stalking it. He was getting all excited, and I love bugs, you know, I love every little creature. And then I saw him get close to it, and he lifted his leg up, and he was going to stomp on it, and he was so excited about it. He was so all in to that activity right there. I was just agog watching him. And then he did. He stomped on it. And my whole soul just fractured. So, you know, I came from a place where that doesn't happen clearly because it was so shocking to me. But the thing that bothered me the most was the glee. It wasn't like, oh, that's a bug, I want it out of the house, or whatever. It's that he had built up so much joy in the destruction of that little creature that it's like I splintered into a bunch of little pieces just out of shock and horror that there is a being that would enjoy destroying another being. I don't know, that's probably not a real common experience, but it really stands out in my background. And then in grade school, another shocking thing happened. I saw my first school fight, and I saw all these kids gathering around these two boys that were tussling, and, you know, somebody's off going to get the teacher, but in the meantime, all these other kids were standing around the fight, enjoying it, and cheering it on. And I was just a little squeak of a kid. I was just little, but there's that little warrior in me, I guess. I went out in the middle of that circle, and I started yelling at all those kids. I said, what is wrong with you? Why are you enjoying this? Mm-hmm. What is wrong with you? To me, it was like, did all of your parents raise you this badly? I couldn't understand how they could be so different from me. Why were they enjoying watching two boys hurting each other? So I kind of came into this life with a very similar thing to what you're talking about. I just wanted to go around and help everything. You know, how can I help you? How can I help you? You know, I would pick up little, everywhere I go, pick up little toad or frog and carry it across the road, right? You know, just always doing things like that. But I think what stands out in my childhood is the feeling of being appalled at what seems to be in human nature. What are your thoughts on that? Is that human nature? Do we learn that?
I don't think it's human nature. From what I remember of being, I can remember back being the 2 years old, and maybe, you know, there's a time in my crib. We learned these things. My brother, this is another funny story. I got a few of these when I was a kid, but I think I was two, and I was in one of those little playpens, and I thought it was a piece of crap. I remember clearly thinking, my brother got this new crib, and my mom had been talking about it, and somehow I understood that, what that was. And here he was, and he was rubbing it in my face, and he would bang his head off the top of this crib while he was trying to rock himself to sleep. And he had this big smile on his face, like a big grin. And I'd be standing there holding on to the bars, like a prison bar, going, ah! And my mom would not come because she knew what I was doing. But I'll tell you what, the love I felt at that age, that's what we are, in my opinion. We come from this place of pure love, and something happens, whether it's our parents, whether it's the people around us, or even just energy messing with us, it manipulates us and it removes us from what we truly are. I think all children are born with that great love, and then somewhere along the way, you know, unless you come in pissed off from a previous lifetime, you know, maybe you were like Attila the Hun, and you're pissed off at everybody. I'm a baby, and I'm pissed off at everybody. Rah! You know, maybe it's some of that. But I think most children are filled with the love because that's what we just came from. We just came from what we truly are. Don't you think that's what we are in our natural state is pure love?
You keep telling me funny stories, and then I need to get serious.
Right, sir.
Attila the Hun, that is cracking me up. I know people who have had really horrible past lives, and very accurate. I see them bringing all that angst and fear. Mostly it translates into fear. You know, if somebody has a fear of heights, they've fallen off a cliff before, I guarantee you. You know, we do really bring that baggage from past lives into this life. But I think we're born absolutely pure at the same time. And again, you can go back to the charting your life thing. It's like, what did I choose to experience in this life? If you look at your life from that perspective, the really cool thing about that is it immediately removes any sense of blaming anybody for anything.
Absolutely.
And I think that concept alone would really help humanity if we didn't blame somebody else, if we got out of our victim roles and understood that that person that we think did something bad to us, they're probably a soul family member, just like I was saying about, you know, the villains that come into society. They're actually serving a purpose that they volunteered for. And it might be a softer, gentler way to look at villains that they volunteered because there was a lesson to be learned. Even with murders and things like that, those two souls agreed to do that. So your soul family is on the other side, and you say, hey, will you be, we were talking about marrying an alcoholic a bunch of times, right? Have horrible, dysfunctional life. Well, you ask that person probably loves you very much. They're probably part of your soul family, and they agreed to come in and serve that role because your soul is still trying to learn whatever lesson that is, and they agreed to it. So if you see yourself, it's a way to look at everybody as a teacher, and as you're saying, stay in a state of love and just be grateful that that person, that being, that soul, volunteered to cause conflict in your life so that you could learn something. They're a teacher. Look at your negative experiences as teachers and be grateful and know that you probably decided that for yourself, and
right,
that kind of leaves nobody else to blame.
You know, I look at it too like, okay, so we have like this plan before we come here, an outline. I call it an outline of what we're going to do. But then also I think there's the law of attraction is always coming into play. So maybe some of these people that show up in your life, you brought them in just by the way you think. If you think you're a victim or you're afraid of things, somebody's going to rob me. Well, then you're kind of sending out that message, and there's someone that's going to play that role. Or, oh, I'm walking underneath down this road by a cliff and a boulder is going to fall on my head. Well, then you're kind of bringing that into. So we kind of have like two options the way I look at it. I don't know how you feel on this because you probably studied it more, but we have the outline of what we want to accomplish. And then that outline can go really well and we can mess it up with our thoughts and feelings because we're little creators, always creating. And so, oh, I feel like I don't deserve that. And then the universe says, you don't. because that's what you feel. Is there any of that going on, do you feel?
Okay, so I see a blending of all those concepts. So what's at the core of that is free will, freedom of choice, and how much you know about how things work, which, again, is why I wrote the book. It's the secrets of how life works, basically, and the law of attraction is a huge one, and it's a quantum function. So instead of saying there's cause and effect, where something happens out there and it affects you, that's not actually the way it is. It's you are a certain way, and you have a certain resonance about you that draws those things outside of you to you, right? So if you think a boulder's going to come down the mountain and kill you, it probably will, because you're holding the vibration of that scenario. So there's things that we chart, and maybe there's this, what you're talking about, maybe there's somebody who's in victimhood, you know, that things happen to me. Maybe that's been a theme for many lives. You see how all these threads kind of weave together, but then you come into knowing maybe in a certain life, and you listen to this radio show, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, I can look at this totally differently. I have free will. I can change this victimhood thing. And then you can literally change your chart. You can change what you planned before, because you have free will at all times. So maybe you suddenly learn about how the real law of attraction works, and it's not exactly how it's put out in certain books out there. There's some key things that are missing. I would recommend Dr. Joe Dispenza to your listeners. He has got the law of attraction down, and it was, interestingly, already in my book. I started this book in 1999, and there's a note in there from the birth angel from when Shalimar is born. And on the note it says, you need to combine your mind, heart, and spirit as one to be one of one. So what that means, again, that's be the change. Pull yourself together as one, and if all of us do this, then we'll all be interconnected as one entity, which again goes back to tribal living. They live as an entity, not as individuals of what about me, what about me. But going back to the law of attraction, if you can get your mind, your thoughts, your feelings, and your behavior aligned to what you truly want, and you can hold that long enough, that will create a resonance, a vibration that will draw what you want to you. If you can hold that and you can put all those together at once, you can change your life any way you want to. You have that free will to change anything at any time, regardless of your chart. But it's a matter of people understanding that they have that ability.
You know,
we kind of just decide that, you know, we're going to be like this forever, but we can change it.
I really like what you're saying, because a lot of people won't admit to this. They say, oh, no, you've got this plan, you've got to follow through. And it's like, and I think, you know, the being that created us is constantly creating and allows us to do whatever it is we want. So if you tell me, nope, TJ, you're locked into, remember that there's going to be at 4:40 tomorrow afternoon, you're going to have a giant bowling ball drop from the sky from a plane, it's going to fall out, and it's going to hit you on the head, and you're going to get a goosebump the size of like 6 inches high like they do in the cartoons. And you say, no, I'm changing that. And I like the idea that we do have the ability to, if we've gained something from something, that we can actually change kind of like on the fly. I think that's why we leave our bodies, because we're always planning new adventures. So many times when we're sleeping, we will travel and hook up with other people and plan what we're going to do. And I know this has happened to me before, and I'll come back and I'll wake up the next day and I'll be really tired. And it's like, okay, what are we planning to do now? You know, what's the next little adventure that we're going on? But I really like the idea of you saying that we can change this. It doesn't have to be this way, does it?
No, we're at full choice all of the time. It's just that knowledge has been suppressed, and we need to get that information out. We've been conditioned as a species and as a culture to believe that we're not in power, that we're not in control, that we're helpless, that we have to live our lives a certain way, that everything else is bigger than us, and it's just not true. So we need to get the other information out that says you can change your environment anytime you want to by changing who you are and what you attract to you. You can change literally anything. You can change your health. You can change anything. So if each of us did this individually, can you imagine how wonderful the world could be if we had this information more available?
You mentioned to me earlier, or at least during the interview, you were talking about that those of us that are going to balance our vibrations, and I really believe that 100%, because I'm being shown that every day. It's like I've got to balance. I think I'm pretty balanced, but not all the time. If we don't balance, what is going to become of the people that don't do that? What is your theory on that?
Oh boy, that's a hot topic, even in our realm with all the experts and knowledgeable people that we know. There's a lot of different opinions on that one. So the ones who do raise their vibration and go forward, like what's called the new earth or the fifth dimension, or again, there's a lot of terms for that too. I don't think anybody completely knows the answer to this. I'm just going to say that. I do an awful lot of research, and the things that I adopt are things that I've heard many, many different places that say exactly the same thing, and they would have no reason to agree, like quantum physics and Egyptian mythology and astrology and a channeler, you know, talking to Michael. If they all say the same thing, I'm pretty likely to adopt that, and then I'll test it out to see if it's true. But it's just, I don't get a real strong consensus on what happens to everybody. Everybody kind of, even these, the QHHT, hypnosis, Dolores Cannon's praxis with the quantum healing technique, they're getting all kinds of information. People can go to YouTube and watch their videos talking to clients that are in these deep states and just releasing all kinds of information about this event and that the waves of energy that are coming through and that we're in the transition. So many things are in agreement that we are going somewhere. Something is happening. Now, what happens to the ones who get with the program, who raise the vibration, who are in a state of happiness, who understand law of attraction, who are excited about moving forward to wherever it is we're going? They'll go that way. The other ones are still lopping off heads in the Middle East and shooting up schools and just anything on that continuum. Those are the two extremes. But anything that, you know, where people just don't get it, and they stay kind of dark, and they can't get out of this trap, and their vibration is low, and they're on drugs, and they're abusive, you name it, those lower functioning ones, that's, from what I can tell, still up for grabs what happens to them. But I think I've heard that they'll just, like, stay in a third density Earth, and the others move on, or they potentially go to a different third density planet, but they stay in the level that they're functioning at. You can't force somebody to raise their vibration, and not everybody is meant to go. So they'll go at their own pace. It's not like, oh, they're just going to go, you know, like a bug with those the bug zappers.
Right.
Oh, you can't have
You'd think if it's an all-loving universe created by an all-loving being, a being that only knows love, is the way I feel that this being is, and I can't begin to probably remember all of what this being is, but you're not going to force anything on anyone. And there's two theories kind of floating around out there. One of the theories is that there will actually be two Earths, and those that want to stay in the lower vibration, they'll actually exist on what's it, like a 3D Earth that'll stay, and then the other ones will move on. Or, no, this place will no longer exist, but the third dimensional Earth. But these beings will be allowed to go to a similar place to continue that, if they want to experience duality. You know, it just boils down that we no longer want separation. It was a fun experiment. Many of us enjoyed it for many, many, many millions of years. Many of us had to learn the really hard way, lump after lump after lump. And now we're going, you know, okay, I think I'm done with that. And I'm ready to move on. And some maybe are just starting this journey because not everybody comes here at the same time. And they're going, oh, that looks like fun, that duality. I like being lost. This is great. And so are they going to be allowed to follow that journey? And I say, why not? You know, just somewhere else maybe. That's kind
of. Well, and then there's those who came here just to provide contrast, who look like they're low vibration, but actually
everybody,
they're a very evolved soul.
And everybody really is on their soul level. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I used to teach this to my kids when we would go out and about and we'd see a boy with a girl with Down syndrome or a homeless person sitting on the sidewalk. And, you know, I would say don't ever look at them as anything less, because those are very likely extremely evolved souls. Mm-hmm. Because the more evolved you are, the harder the lessons you're able to handle. So reaching way back in the conversation, I think we said something about things going easy for people and they have it on easy street. Well, maybe those souls aren't as evolved. Maybe, you know, all of us can look at somebody who just has a lot of money and just they have this great life and everything's so easy and nothing bad ever happens. Well, those are the ones that if I had to feel sorry for anybody, it might be those, because chances are they weren't evolved enough to bring on the real contrasting difficulties that evolved souls seek. So look at the ones that seem disadvantaged and have respect for them, because they're probably more evolved than we are.
Absolutely.
If they're taking on such tragic circumstances.
And some of the ones that played the worst roles throughout history, I think a lot of them have, not all of them, but I think a lot of them have chosen to come at a certain time to unite others, either, you know, and you can look at everybody too. There are qualities in everybody that could be, you can find good in everybody, you know. We could look at the president and say he has no redeeming good qualities, and I disagree. I think there are a lot of good things about him. And I think if you want to make a difference with this individual, then send him love as opposed to hate, because somewhere inside he feels all of that, and that makes him probably react the way he does. And it explains, but I think, you know, he signed up for it just like a lot of us have signed up for everything we're doing, and it's all meant to be, to nudge us along at this time. So it's so easy to fall into the trap of, well, this person's this and that person's that, and we start judging, and we have to let go of all that and kind of step away from it. We have a little more time left. Do you want to talk about, and you're going to come on again, right? Would you promise to do that?
I would love to. I love talking with you.
Great. So you do channeling. This is what I really love, is you talk about you channeled Michael and Metatron. Are those some of the ones you've talked to?
Oh, I've talked to so many interesting beings. Metatron is, from my understanding and information I've been getting for years, he pretty much created our universe, and he's in charge of this shift. Michael is like with all light workers. He's like our little bodyguard and our mm-hmm. confidant and our friend, and just about anybody can channel Michael anytime they want to. He's really pretty easy. But he sticks with me pretty close. He helps me through all the trials I've gone through and learning all of this stuff. But I talk to Metatron a lot. He's very scientific. He's very geometric. You know, he's the Platonic solids. He's the Metatron's cube. He's the sacred geometry guy. Maybe people know him that way.
Yeah,
He's just very business-like in a way. He's just so smart. Not that he isn't kind and loving, because he is, but he's very smart, and Michael is kind and protective, and Azrael, he's the biggie. Whoa. So this is what people would know as the death angel. He's very old world when I talk to him. He's very dramatic. He's a little scary. He's only shown up in the past couple of years. He's the one that came in and said, these are the days of judgment, which does not mean there's a God on a throne judging everybody and you get to go to heaven or not. It's judging of yourself. He is a pretty intense character, but I've talked to Jesus and Mary and Ascended Masters and just kind of whoever wants to come through. It's a very interesting experience, because as you write, you can see these completely different personalities. And they use words I've never even heard of before. Like Michael, there's a beautiful poem that came through, and that's something you can't just write. I mean, you have to sit and make poems rhyme, right? Mm-hmm. But boom, just like taking dictation, there it was, the most beautiful poem I've ever seen. And in there was the word pate. He was talking about something resting upon your pate. And it's like, what is a pate? So I had to go look it up, and it's a very old word for mind or your head. And it's like, you know, when you just get used to it yourself. I know it can be very strange for other people to think, oh, you're talking to a real angel. You know, that's like talking to God or something. Well, they're just other entities. They don't have a body. They're very high dimension. Again, it's to me, it's more science than it is like religious. It's high vibration beings that are coming here and helping us out, and they're more than happy to talk to you if you just can conceive of that possibility first. You have to conceive of it being possible. That's where you start. Then you believe that it's possible, and then you do it for yourself. So anybody who doesn't understand channeling or wants to be involved in channeling, I always say with psychic abilities in general that doubt to a psychic is like kryptonite to Superman. Mm-hmm. If you doubt what you're doing, and you aren't, stay in your heart and bring white light around you first, always. But go ahead and try it. Just start to ask questions and write down what you hear in your mind, and just let it be what it is. Don't think, just listen. And you'll get these impressions. You'll get impressions of a sense, impressions of a sentiment. You'll get pictures in your head, and you'll know exactly what it means. And just conceive that you can do it, then believe you can do it, and don't doubt it. And you will do it like everybody else is. It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that, you know, some people that do channeling will tell me that they kind of step aside and they allow something to speak through them, and maybe they don't always remember it. But you're talking about more of like the automatic writing channeling, aren't you?
Yes, but that is channeling. That's the same thing.
Right.
So there's conscious channeling, which automatic writing is a good place for people to start. And then there's trance channeling, where you step out. I would not recommend that to anybody other than people who are meant to do that and very, very trained and very, very experienced. You don't want to hand over your sovereignty. I mean, that's what I was talking about, free will. When you accept somebody else to come in and talk through you, I am really against Ouija boards also, and I'm not even fond of pendulums, because you are allowing something to come in and speak through you physically. You know, just don't. Just don't take the risk. You know, that's for professional trance channelers, because as soon as you say, yeah, you can come in and speak through me, you've handed over your free will to every entity in the universe. And there are some very, very bad ones waiting for naive people to think, oh, I'm going to be a trance channeler. I'm going to see if I can do this. No, just don't. Let the professionals do that. Unless you're going to do this for the rest of your life as a professional, there's no reason to, when you can just do the direct channel, the conscious channeling, and get answers for yourself. But even then, be aware of your free will, surround yourself with divine white light, ask the being that you feel may step forward, if they're from the divine white light, three times, matters that you do it three times, if they're still there and you feel good about it, you can go ahead and receive information for them. But it's not something you want to play around with. It could be a very dangerous game. Nobody should use a Ouija board. That can bring in entities that stick with you for the rest of your life.
You know, and not just messing with a Ouija board, but I'll tell you another story. This is kind of hilarious, too. It's like if you get yourself...
Great stories. Oh, my gosh. You have great stories. I read your Strange Happenings tab on your... I love your website. But that page that you have, what is it called? Strange Events or
yeah,
Strange Happenings?
So. Yeah.
Oh, my God, that was entertaining. Great stories. Go ahead.
This is when I was, like, in my 20s, and I moved back up here because I used to live in Mississippi. I'm from Upper Michigan, but I moved away and worked in radio for a couple of years down there. And I moved back up here, and I hooked up with one of my buddies that I had gone to broadcasting school with, and he worked at a radio station not far from here. And we decided we were going to go down to a Milwaukee Brewer game. And being a younger guy, I like to drink a little bit of beer. And so... I was hammered by time before the game even started. And I've always been a friendly guy, good-natured usually, but I am standing there. It's like I'm watching myself walking through County Stadium, which was County Stadium at the time, and I'm yelling to people, hey! Ah! And I'm like, I'm looking for a fight. And I'm thinking, I'm 5'6", 140 pounds. What are you doing? And fortunately, one of my buddies comes up to me and he grabs me on the shoulder, says, come on, we've been looking for you. I've been watching you. You're acting really weird. We're going to bring you back to your chair up on the, we were in the bleacher seats, the cheap seats. And he brought me up there and I proceeded to pass out for the first seven innings of the game. And I kept falling asleep on my buddy's shoulder and he kept pushing me off. Then I'd fall on somebody else's shoulder and they'd push me. It's sad. And I shouldn't have done it. But, you know, I had to learn sometimes the hard way. But one thing I gained out of that is when you let alcohol or drugs or even prescription medications When they control us, they lower our vibration, and something else can work through us. And that's exactly what I felt was happening to me. There was this, wouldn't call it darker, just an absence of light, an absence of love, because it's on its own journey, and it decided to borrow my body for a short period of time. That's what can happen, I think, when you allow yourself to be in that kind of position.
I couldn't agree more, and that's a message that I wanted to get out to watch drugs and alcohol. That's a time when a lot of people who commit suicide, they are under the influence, and that little voice is in their head saying, you should just do this, you should just do this. Well, it's because they're at such a low vibration with whatever they're depressed about, and then they contribute alcohol or drugs to it, so you lost a lot of your judgment, and then those dark energies come in and just pretty much take over. But if people aren't aware that that can happen, they can't protect themselves from it.
You know, when you're filled with love and joy, this is what I find, and happiness, you're on this high. You can feel it. You've got this high going, this vibration, a natural high. To me, you can actually feel the vibration. It feels so good. Just talking to you, I feel really, really, really good. And then when you're depressed or angry or you take alcohol, not that you can't have a drink or two, but if you get down to that certain state where you kind of give up your power, you've lowered your vibration to where these other beings are at, and you've opened the doorway for them to take control a little bit. And, you know, we don't realize that we're giving that up. But I don't think anything ever possesses your soul. It can just mess with your body a bit. How do you feel about those things?
Oh, boy. I completely agree with all of that. There are entities waiting for you to get in a low vibration so they can jump in, and that's why you need to stay in a high vibration. If you feel like there is something dark around you, the best thing you can do is get happy right away. Go into gratitude, go into joy, call up somebody who's really happy, start telling jokes, laugh about things, watch these funny cat videos on YouTube where they're doing silly things. Those always crack me up.
Right.
Just get happy really quick, and it won't have access to you anymore. But as far as possessing, I do think it's possible if you've handed over your free will. It will inhabit. They do want to take over. They do want to wreak havoc any way they can, and they will use people that are willing to hand over their free will to do it. I wouldn't say that they're like permanently lodged. I still feel like we always have sovereignty. We always have free will, but we have to know. Again, I keep coming back to the same point. People have to be educated. They have to know how things work in order to make them work in their own lives. So if you don't know that you have free will, you'll be like, oh, this thing has taken over me, I can't get rid of it. Yeah, you can, but you have to take your space back. You have to be in command, and you have to mean it in your thoughts, in your feelings, and in your behaviors. Again, to manifest, you have to have all those three things together. But if you allow it in there, I don't know, I wouldn't say that you are possessed. I would say that there's a continuous state of allowing that entity to remain. That's
right.
What I would say.
I guess all I'm saying is that it might inhabit your body, and you might have a tough time removing it or having somebody help you remove it if in extreme cases. But the part that is you, that essence, nothing, in my opinion, can control that. That part of you that resides, your little speck near the heart, whatever you want to call it, the soul, the part of you that mostly resides in a higher place that's lowered itself down, that's individual for everybody, and nothing can ultimately control that. Do you agree with that, or is that something you see?
Yeah, that's the free will. So we're basically saying the same thing.
Okay.
We're always in possession of our own soul and our own free will and our own space and our own sovereignty, our own God spark, and it is pure. But it's whether you know you have control over that I think makes the difference for people.
Yeah, in a physical body. I think once we get out of here and we go, you know, do you think that maybe there are little pieces of us, people have said this to me before too, and I want to get your take on it, that there are several levels of consciousness that we lower down to get to this one, and that we kind of leave a piece of ourselves in each one of these places. Is that something you've heard before or studied before?
Yeah, there's aspects of beings. So there's aspects of me out there in other people. We do leave little bits of ourselves all over the place. And then people can tune into that. So when somebody says, oh, I think I've been ISIS before, you know, and I've heard a lot of people say that, it's true to some extent. There isn't one person who was the one ISIS saying that ISIS existed. There is aspects of the entity that is known as ISIS that is fractionated. It's fractalized, mm-hmm. let's say. And it can anybody can attach to or invite in or utilize an aspect of that being, and it's drawn to some people more than others. So maybe some people are very identified with Mary Magdalene. Well, they have aspects of that energy that is known as Mary Magdalene in them that work with them, and we have aspects of ourselves everywhere also. We're not just these one singular little one spot, one contained little unit.
That's cool. That's a good way to explain it. And on that note, anything else you want to tell us? People want to get your book. Where can they find that?
It's at thepearlsofwisdombook.com, and we would love to have you come visit our site. All the proceeds for the book, and there's gifts there too for Christmas, like mugs and things. All the proceeds go to our foundation, Angel Whispers, which is an outreach program, nonprofit program, to empower young girls to stay strong and meet their potential.
I think this was a great conversation. I hope you enjoyed it, because we just went down so many directions and it just flowed. So I know there's more you want to tell me, and I'll be glad to let you do that anytime you want, if you don't mind.
I would love it so much. I have really, really enjoyed talking with you. I love your breadth of knowledge. I love your open-mindedness. You're so easy to talk to. I just am very grateful you have me on your show.
Very grateful that you came on, Sherry. Thank you.